one at the stumps. There might have been an outside edge on it, but it doesn't matter. The contest is done now. Australia win.
Banders, look, I'm very sorry to all our listeners. I was actually offline last week. I just heard the audio then. We won 2-0. We won the test easily. Anything happen?
Nah, pretty quiet 5 days, really. So nothing to take part. Pretty short pod today. No, absolutely. How are you feeling? I'm a bit rattled. I'm tired. I'm exhausted emotionally. It's
emotionally, right? That's the thing. Usually you're getting exhausted by being up until 4 a.m. Yeah.
Well, up 2-0 all of a sudden, but it hasn't really had time to celebrate because of all the controversy and hoo-ha that's been going on. I've actually found myself being at times a little bit almost upset this week, Tails.
Oh, I was angry. I was ready to go Monday morning. I was ready to punch on.
So, I mean, now we've talked about it, let's get straight into it. Johnny Bairstow and the stumping.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to start with Johnny Bairstow and carrying a protester off. Remember that?
Yeah.
When did that happen? Like 7 years ago.
Last Ashton series?
But anyway, yes. Yes. So Johnny Bairstow and the stumping. Look, first of all, let's give our initial reactions to it. So my initial reaction.
Yeah. And a few days have gone past now too, Tao. So yeah. I was initially pretty upset and we don't want to harp on it too long in the show because everyone's been doing it, but we do need to have a bit of a chat about it because it's such an obvious thing. So, yeah, your reaction, go.
My initial reaction was it was fine. And I guess I am Australian. But my initial reaction was that I looked at it and I was like, that's fine. I've seen that happen 500 times before in cricket. Admittedly, the cricket that the level I played, not internationally. Didn't really see any sort of spirit of the game issues or anything like that. I hated the fact that the English got upset about it. I detested the reaction of the members. We'll get into that in a little moment. But certainly for me, I saw it and was just like, oh, yeah, bit of clever cricket. Play on. Good, important wicket and important time.
Yeah, I said I found myself a little bit upset over the hoo-ha, I guess, over the last few days. But it seems like it has just started to just simmer off a little bit. Today, before we get into do the Leeds test, but yeah, I was the same, and I've tried to think about this from different angles. So I've sort of analysed it, tried to cool off, and I think there's two ways you can look at the dismissal. And I've tried to look at it from a against the spirit of cricket sort of argument, and that is essentially that Bairstow is not trying to take an advantage. He's not trying to run. He's not trying to take advantage of the situation. He's not batting outside his crease to get an advantage with the bowling. So therefore, you know, Carey, fine, throw out the stumps. No one disagrees. Like, I don't think there's an issue with Carey throwing it at the stumps. But realizing he doesn't get advantage of calling back. Great. That's one argument. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can see where people are coming from. The other argument is the ball's live. The Australians clearly have kept it live because of how short a time Carey's had it in his hand. It's not Bairstow's choice to decide if it's live or not. That's not the rules. It's not up to him. It's never been up to that in cricket. He didn't show the players, the Australians, any respect by looking around and seeing if the ball was dead, as you normally do. And he's made a mistake, and Australians have punished him for it. And, you know, why is it Australia's responsibility to be Mr. Nice Guy and not punish Bairstow for what's a pretty big mistake? That's sort of the two arguments straight away. And I know which side I sit on. I'm sort of don't see any problem with it. But the absolute carry-on that has been going on, you know, in the long room from the MCC members, the English players themselves, I thought were pretty disgraceful and have a bit to answer for. They won't. But, you know, when you consider that, you know, 50-50 decision, if it's, oh, I don't love it, or, yeah, it's fine, there shouldn't have been the carry-on they have. And especially you've got ex-English captains, you know, Vaughan, Atherton, Morgan, Nasser Hussain coming out and saying, no, nothing wrong with it. And you realise that it's just getting pumped up for no reason. And it was nasty, Tails. That what happened in the long room there was I don't think it was acceptable.
Absolutely not, Van. Is that the optics of it, which is always the crucial word, look absolutely terrible when you consider that it was the members who went after Usman Khawaja. When you look at that in isolation, you see these, you know, puffed up white dudes in their establishment house at their spiritual home having a go at the Muslim, the softly spoken Muslim that's in there. It looked terrible. It looked absolutely awful. But this is what, there's a few things I found really difficult to cop about it. The first one is partially based on the members, because I don't understand how they did the mental gymnastics of, well, if Bairstow had done this, so if we reverse the situation, if Bairstow had run out Carey, it'd all be fine with them. But there'd be no spirit of cricket debate. Nobody would be sitting in there tutting Bairstow. which is difficult in itself. If you really think about Mancads, like Mancads are probably regarded in cricket, I don't know what you think, are regarded in cricket as like a morally worse thing to do, I would have thought, than what Carey did, right?
Yeah, 100%.
It's the worst thing to do. Well, the MCC 18 months ago, those guys, those members...
Well, they make the rules, don't they?
They sat there and said that that's okay now, that the Mancad is okay. So I don't understand how they did the mental gymnastics of, well, Bairstow, that was against the spirit of cricket, but if he'd have done it, it would have been fine. But also the Mancad's okay, but this is a morally corrupt thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, and there's absolutely no deception or misleading in Carey's actions. He got the ball and threw it straight away. Didn't wait for him to wander out. And so I just think it's ridiculous, to be honest. And, you know, I've just got pretty sick of it and over it. And I think that Bairstow was embarrassed, to be honest.
Yeah,
and I think it was time in the game where, and a time in the series, now we talk about that, where England needed to jump on something, get angry about it, and the only way they're going to get back into the series now is by firing themselves up and firing their fan base up. You know what? And no one's been talking this week about how England's played pretty awfully with the best conditions against Australia. They've batted in the best conditions, they've bowled in the best conditions. They're now 2-0 down. No one's talking about it. The crowd's going to be right behind them at Leeds. So, you know, tactically it might be smart from England, but I think it, you know, I just think it...
It felt out of the sort of the Sir Alex Ferguson school of sports media management, didn't it? Pick a fight with something that you can pretend to be, you know, morally superior on and get everyone focusing on that issue and not focusing on the fact that this vaunted attack of Anderson, Broad, Robinson, so dangerous in English conditions, Stokes, always a thorn in our side. Tong, who was the best of them, was actually really good. That vaunted attack had to resort to just bowling bumpers at us for 98% of session two. It wasn't a bumper and over. It wasn't like a short ball, you know, we're going to try this for a half hour. That was a sustained artillery barrage, and that was what they resorted to, and that's all they had left because they are completely bereft of ideas because of the superior skill of our Australian batsmen. So I agree with you. That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about how completely impotent, how flaccid the English bowling attack actually is and how Bazball with the bat hasn't come through yet.
Well, exactly. But also we should talk about Steve Smith's, you know, fabulous ton in the first innings. And then even more so, Stokes is amazing 150.
Oh, my God.
That got him into a winning position from absolutely nowhere. And that's not talked about at all. And that's a real shame because I just think that some moments were stolen away from everyone from that test match.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And so, look, I'm going to be really interested to see how it plays out over the next couple of days.
Yeah. Can you take me through? I just want you to take me into your mindset. I know we've been distracted by the Carey thing. Take me into your mindset when Stokes started to go? Having seen it before 4 years ago, how did you feel?
It just, the game gets away from you so quickly. You're thinking, all right, Duckett's out. I think it's Bairstow's out. Or Bairstow and Duckett out. There's only, you know, 10 runs or 12 runs between them. So there's about 160 runs left to get. So you just think, you know what, like it's far too far away. But then all of a sudden, within 20 minutes, that's down to 100, you know, at lunch. And then he gets another few overs of pain. That's down to, you know, 80. And that's how quickly the game gets taken away from you. Where if you're playing conventional cricket, you're going to get so many more balls at the opposition and thus so many more chances. But just the way you can turn it on, like it's stressful. The game it gets taken away from you. As we saw, the Australians, you know, I don't think had the greatest tactics again, but were able to, what they couldn't do at Headingley last time, they were able to regroup, have a long chat on the ground, and then just slightly tweak their tactics. And that in the end is what sort of got the wicket for them. But as you can see, those games can just get taken away from you before you know it. So
incredible. And you're right. It did get, the moment got taken away from us, just how extraordinary that innings is. And it's funny, I was looking at social commentary online prior to this inning, and it was basically saying, why does everyone think Ben Stokes is amazing? And you've made the point.
Yeah.
He averages mid-30 bat and ball.
Statistically, like, he's not.
Statistically, he's not. But there is something about the way, and these are my favorite sort of players, when the moment demands it, can give you more. They are the most rarest of beings. They're the most special players. And I love watching him. I like and hate it at the same time. Oh, I love the way he can make me feel things. He can make me feel so much fear and so much dread, even though like he'll end up averaging 30 for the series. And you'll be like, why did I care about him? because the sheer level of danger and the way he can bend a match to his will, I think, is just so remarkable. And you're right, that absolutely needs to be celebrated properly.
And just, we haven't sort of planned for this, but just on Stokes, it'll be really interesting to see how he reacts to this, because you got the sense that he used the Bairstow incident to fire himself up. And, you know, fine, you got to find a way to fire yourself up and played amazing for it. But it'll be interesting to see if he stays fired up throughout the series, because his body is struggling.
Oh, that's the even more remarkable thing.
He bowled 12 over straight in the second test and he couldn't stop bowling, because if he stopped, he wouldn't be able to keep going. So
I
think that I'm not sure his body can last another three tests of bowling as much. So it'll be really interesting to see. So if Australia keep that in mind, and that may affect changes, we'll look the likely changes that are coming to this lead test that we'll obviously talk about in a moment, Tails.
Ben, it's just before we leave Carey and Bairstow, I feel like what you saw from Johnny Bairstow was like a microcosm of Bazball, in the sense that he just thought he could walk out of his crease and nothing could happen to him. He thought he was invincible, bulletproof. He could do what he wanted. And this is what I think is most galling about Bazball to me. It wasn't so much the reaction of the MCC members, but it's the fact that they believe that everything they do is right, and that every single action they take is somehow just, and that more than anything, they don't have to pay homage to the history of the game. They don't have to pay homage to the spirit of the game. They don't have to pay homage to the laws of the game. Stuart Broad just runs down the crease, doesn't even appeal anymore, never appeals, just expects it to be out. They bludgeon the ball and expect the game to bend on its knee and be like, yes, you no longer have to bat time. You can bat however you want. That's what I don't like about it. And that's what I think this is a microcosm of. Johnny Bairstow just walking out of his crease thinking, this game is about me and what I'm doing. It's not about anybody else.
Yeah, 100%. And it's disrespectful. And I think we touched on it before. And I was trying to remember back to my cricketing days, which were a long time ago. But now I was thinking back, at the end of an over, you definitely don't leave your crease until you hear over or you hear the ball past. And no one's ever, like, that's crazy what he did. It's absolutely insane. But Taz, I guess throughout the week, and it didn't leave a great taste in my mouth, but seeing videos, you know, I guess a lot of Australians' videos of stuff that, you know, similar things that Bairstow's done in the past, Broad obviously nicking the ball and not walking, nicking the first slip of Agar, and then stuff McCollum's done in the past. You know, I don't think it's great to have these, like, oh, got you. You did bad. You're a dog.
Mm.
But it does, if anything, it does show that the incident itself wasn't as clear cut as that's an awful thing to do on the cricket field. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not as clear cut as that. So I think, you know, whilst I don't like just sort of like, oh, but you did this back and, or you said this back in 2015 when you were 18 years old, but it does show that it's not just clear cut and not everyone should feel the same way. So the reaction's been outrageous. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and sorry I'm ranting here, but Brendan McCullum did some things back earlier in his career that he said he wasn't necessarily proud of, and he's come out and said that and he's apologised for it. But just because he's apologised for it doesn't make him the moral compass on everyone's actions from now. Just because you've decided that you wouldn't do something again that you've now done, it doesn't mean that you can just decide that everyone's actions, like, are good or bad. You don't get that right.
You don't. And I find that's a really, really interesting point to think about, because I saw somebody tweet about it or something like that. And they said, what you Aussies don't get is that sandpaper changed everything. Every perception of us is still being read through 40 grain, the best you can get from Bunnings. And that's exactly to your point, what you were just talking about, is that it's very hard for us to sit here and swallow Brendan McCullum taking a position of moral superiority when 5 years ago we did something pretty bad as well. So
absolutely. Oh, it's shocking, the sandpaper incident, but also this is, you know, maybe drawing a long bow, but, you know, how many cricketers around the world, you know, Panesar, Faf du Plessis, have come out and said that, you know, Shoscoffy, they put lollies on the ball. So it's just this
Michael Atherton, you know.
It goes on and on. And I've always said it doesn't matter what you put on the ball, if it changes. It doesn't matter if it's a hammer or a feather, it's still, anyway. So that's not defending any of the Australians' actions or anything like that, but everyone just needs to just have a big relax and maybe just think before they take this outrageous moral high ground. So, Tails, we've spent a fair bit of time recapping that test at all. There was one
event that took... I needed to get that out.
Yeah, just, so did I. It's like therapy. But look, it's, you know, second test done, 3-2, Australia up 2-0. We can talk about that result and what it means. But I think it's a great time to do a little bit of a stock take on both teams, individual players, who's going well, who's struggling, whose spot might be up for, you know, maybe not up for question this test, but a few more failures and they might struggle. So let's move through the winning side first. Let's move through Australia. So Quires, you're obviously going well, no concerns.
Brilliant. Oh, good.
Warner seems to have knuckled down a fair bit. It doesn't look great, but looks like he's in for the fight.
I think he had some luck at Lords. Like, he definitely had some luck. He should have nicked off early. But I was really proud. Well, proud. It sounds so demeaning, doesn't it? That's really paternalistic. Well, I was really pleased with how he batted in the second innings because he wasn't there. Hands and feet. He wasn't there. He was struggling. And he still batted an hour and a half. Like, or 2 hours or whatever it was. So I thought that was incredibly pleasing to me. So worst case scenario for David Warner, if he spends time at the crease, that's a great win for us. So yeah, absolutely a ticket so far. Have you seen Marnus?
He's made some, you know, 20, 30, 40s without looking particularly good. So I think the good thing is I feel like he's going to get it right at some stage during the series. Now, hopefully that's this test for Australia's point of view. But, you know, I don't think he's looked great and he's made some issues, but he does still manage to score runs if he's out in the middle. So I think he'll come good. I still, you know, feeling good about Marnus, and he's a lock for the series anyway. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought he was really lucky. I think it was the second innings when he got that 30. And got out really softly, but at the same time, probably should have got out a couple of times before. So yeah, he was pretty lucky. Steve Smith, an imperious 100, as we know. I think the days of Steve ever owning a series are probably gone. But at the same time, in the sense that I don't think he's ever going to have that series again where he makes, you know, 600 runs at an average of 80. There's going to be peaks, but even like, you know, him getting out for 110, in the past, he probably makes 170. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I think we're getting from Steve. And that's
He's got 2 tons left this series, I reckon.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He's 34. So, we, you know, the expectation is incredibly high on him. Yeah. I think that's probably where we're at. How are you seeing it?
Yeah, I agree. I think England are going to be careful because he looks like he might have found his groove here. And it looks like England are going to make a bowling change. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But Woke's coming in with a little bit of... bit more pace as well. So, as well as Wood. And I think that actually, you know, whilst it might ruffle some feathers for Smith, I think it'll help him score as well when he's in the zone. So, look, I think watch out, England. They don't want to make a mistake with him because he'll take this third test away from them.
Absolutely. Trav Head, that's a tick from me.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think he'll go, and I think he'll be good with the extra pace as well. But they're going to bowl short to him. So, again, he's got some stuff to work through, but looks like everyone's bowling short to everyone. So,
Green, how do we feel?
I think he hasn't found his mojo yet. No. I don't think he's in any danger. He brings, obviously, his catching's been elite so far. He's a very handy and quick medium pacer, a quick all-rounder rather. We need some runs out of him. Australia's lower order struggled in both innings. I would say that they probably left 80 out there. 80 to 150 out there, both innings, that would have got Australia over the line, you know, without a doubt against England. So they need that lower order to perform, I think. And I think that it's about time and they do.
Absolutely. Do agree with that. How have you found Alex Carey taking out the stumping? Oh,
he's been brilliant. He's been...
Hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Taking out that stumping, but I think he's got 6 stumpings, you know, in Ashes cricket so far. He's been elite.
Absolutely has.
And he's handy looked tidy. Well, looked very tidy with the bat. Hasn't looked, you know, got some good peels angling back in. So no, I think he's going well. And I think he's, you know, he's played AFL. He's played some hard sports over the GWS Giants. So I just don't see him being too rattled by the Bairstow stumping incident either. So
I agree with that. And I think it's interesting because you've spoken about this and we'll speak about him in a moment. The difference between him and Bairstow, I think Bairstow's mistakes particularly show up how well Alex Carey actually is going to the point where they're even talking about bringing folks. The bowling attack then. So Mitchell Starc gets a tick for me for that test.
Absolutely.
I think.
That's his job. He's going to go for runs, but he's going to take one or two ripper wickets, and that's what he's in the side to do.
How have you seen Cummins and Hazelwood?
I thought Hazelwood hasn't been brilliant, has he? He's been okay, and he's one of the best. You know, he's a brilliant bowler, and I guess Cummins. You know, Cummins found some form there in the second innings with those wickets in the afternoon of day four. So I think Cummins hopefully is finding his groove there. Hazelwood will be interesting to see what if they want to go in with the same 11 or maybe even Boland back in for Hazelwood. Australians didn't bowl much is the only thing. So I think they'll stay the same and they'll back Hazelwood to find his form. Are you?
I feel like they like the pace, don't they? I feel like, as in we do. Like we like the pace. So having seen what they did to Boland, I think we're sort of sitting there going, I don't know if we want to expose him necessarily to that again. So I think we like the extra pace of Hazelwood. He's still averaging 30 and taking a wicket every seven overs. It's not as if he's horrendous. But yeah, I think we like the extra pace, but I do agree with you there. The spinners then, Nathan Lyon is obviously out, and that's incredibly important, which leads us to the first force change of the Australian side for the third test. Todd Murphy comes in. It's really weird. I'm quite comfortable about it. Like, I'm not that worried.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel that it's good. I don't think there's anything like, even if he gets smacked, like he's the heir apparent. He's obviously got talent compared to the other, you know, compared to the phase between Warne and Lyon, where there's a lot of players that just weren't that talented spinning. So even if he gets belted around, you just kind of feel like, you know what, it's good for him. He's got to come into the squad at some stage. So yeah, I feel pretty good about it as well.
The other side, the English, they are missing Ollie Pope due to that shoulder. Which,
how big is that? That's big, I think.
I think it's big because it changes
vice captain too.
I personally, I don't think he in any way is a good batsman, nor do I think he's actually in the leadership group. Okay. But I think it changes the structure of the team, which impacts other players. So they've spoken about who they're going to bring in, which we'll get to in a moment. But if we keep going with what we've done so far, going through individually, Ben Duckett, favourite of yours.
Oh, he's ugly. Don't worry
about Ben Duckett.
Look. He's been playing well. Like, I don't think you can. He looks ugly and he's short and looks like a troll, but he's been playing well in Australia.
Even he looks ugly in the way that he bats? Sure. Or just
no, both. but, you know, Australia's been rolling short to him and they've been getting him eventually. But, you know, he made, 80 and 90, well, 98 and 80 in that test. So I think he's playing pretty well in Australia. Might have to have a bit of a rethink on their plans for him there. So, yeah, he's absolutely in form. Crawley.
Yeah, difficult one because he just doesn't feel like he's ever going to hurt you. But at the same time,
it could hurt.
Like, it just must feel so overwhelming, like as a bowler. Even if he gets 40, he's still getting you a 40, putting you on the back foot straight away. You've already got none for 20 against you after four overs. You think, fuck, like this is so hard. So I don't think he's ever going to hurt us. And I don't think he's ever going to have that innings where he gets 100 or anything like that. But he's always going to get those 40s and 50s and 60s, and you're going to feel overwhelmed at some point during the series.
If we move straight from Ollie Pope onto who's going to be replacing him at number three, which it looks like it's going to be Harry Brook.
Yeah.
That's a big change. Going from five up to...
In keeping with Baswell, though, isn't it? Just to be like, oh, the kid's struggling. I'll put him in the most important...
I think that's a big win for Australia. I mean, I don't know what other option they had, to be honest, except to moving Root up. But I think that's... You know, it's a bit easier down at five, and I think it'll be sink or swim. And I think the Australian bowlers will be pretty on to it, especially if they can get one of the openers early. It's going to be tough work for Brook.
He's always got a start, hasn't he? So what is he averaging? 33 with a high score of 50. So he's always getting a start. A bit unlucky to get out first innings in Edgbaston. But, yeah, he just doesn't feel like he's going to end up scoring, do that what he did against New Zealand or Pakistan and get 180. Or something like that. He just feels like he's going to get his 20 or 30 or 40, and that's kind of going to be it at this stage, which at number three, you're right, that makes things very difficult. Joe Root at four. Joe Root's been batting really well.
He's got, hasn't he? I think he's got a few hundreds left this series, to be honest. He's looked good. He's looked calm. He looks like he understands his game. And he's still the biggest wicket in the English lineup.
Ben Stokes, we've talked about. I've talked about how much I really enjoy him. I love the way that he's just so fucking scary, but at the same time that he raises his game to the next level. Johnny Bairstow, take out the stumping, What are you thinking?
Well, he's looked, he hasn't done much with the bat, but he's looked, I mean, he's given, you know, he's missed a fair bit with the gloves, you know, ignoring that stomach. So he's missed a fair bit with the gloves. An option was for England to bring in Folkes and then bat Bairstow as a specialist batsman. They're not going to do that. So, you know, I think the pressure will remain on his keeping, whether it gets better because he's spending more time out there or it gets worse is remains to be seen. But, I mean, he's the sort of player that he might hurt, you know, 80 or 90 once less in the series. And it'll be interesting to see how his mind is after that incident. Maybe you don't want to poke the bear and maybe he's going to come and hurt Australia. So it's hard to tell.
Getting to our quicks now, Stuart Broad.
Yeah, he's got to be tired. Like he's been bowling. He's been the pick of the, well, Tong was probably the pick of the bowlers, but Stuart's Broad is leading the attack right now for England. He'll keep his spot unless he's got an injury. But again, with aging bowlers, Australia batting for a long time, scoring very similar amount of runs to England almost, but batting a long time. And I think, you know, Stuart Broad's going to, he's going to be tired. So I think the Australians
will
target
that. But it's funny how he's reached this point in his career where the pantomime doesn't bother me. Like, it didn't bother me, him trying to go at Carey or anything like that.
Yeah, you're almost fond of him now.
He feels beyond. Yeah. Yes. Maybe that's just who he is. But I have actually been impressed by how dangerous he's been. There's been a lot of series against Australia where he hasn't looked dangerous. This one, he genuinely looks like he can.
You feel if England win, he's taking 3-4 key wickets in the top of the Australian order.
Exactly right.
So
exactly
he's
right.
A big key.
Ollie Robinson?
Well, ended up with pretty good figures. Yeah. I think he's almost the top wicket taker in the series.
Broad 11, yeah. Robinson 10.
So, you know, we badmouth him a lot, but, you know, he's probably weirdly was the bowler to bowl the short tactics and, you know, rattled out Carey and Head. So, look, I think he'll retain his spot. And I think Anderson, who's our next character,
talking about Jimmy.
Well, he's talking about himself. He's saying it's probably the least effective he's ever felt in his career over two tests, which is, you know, I think brave to come out. He's saying it's not because of age, which is absolutely
fine. No, he's saying it was the pitch's fault.
Absolutely fine. Well, yeah, there's a bit in there. And so I think interesting. I think not bad to rest here anyway. He is old and maybe later in the series you get some green ones and you come back to it. So he'll definitely...
The bad part is Headingley was probably the best place to play him, wouldn't it have been?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, England win this, maybe he doesn't find his way back. It'll be interesting, but yeah, he has not done much at all.
The final one, the kid, Josh Tung, it actually looked genuinely dangerous on day one, that extra pace, and wasn't just a speed merchant. Like, he wasn't that loose.
Had energy about him too. On a flat, on a deck, you know, Australia, Steve Smith in, he looked like he's running in hard, which is sometimes that youth and that, the energy they missed out. Whereas Anderson, just to take back to him, just looked a bit disinterested as well. So, no, good on him. It'll be interesting to see what changes England make. But there have been some whispers of those changes. So, obviously, Ollie Pope out. It looks like, from what I'm hearing early, is that it's going to be, as we discussed, Brooke moving up to 3, which we've already talked about. And then it looks like Moeen Ali and Wokes are going to come into the side for Anderson. So
that means Ali about 7. That mean Mark Wood doesn't play?
Well, that's an interesting point. Does Wood come in for Tong?
Well, this is the conundrum they find themselves in, and this is exactly what you were talking about earlier. Spot on. It was that, like, losing Ollie Pope means that, yeah, okay, you put Brooke up to 5, up to 3, which means Stokes and Bairstow go up 1. All of a sudden, Bairstow's at 6. You play Ali, who hasn't played any test cricket in a long time, apart from Edgbaston, batting him at 7. And then you got, if you don't play Wokes, then you've got Broad batting 8.
Yeah, I think Wokes will play, especially because it gives England another seamer option.
I think Wood's playing.
It gives England another seamer option, and you've also got Stokes unable to bowl much. I think they've got to give Stokes a rest from bowling this test. So, hypothetically, Ali and Wokes, it either gives them a really long batting lineup that could be strong, or it gives them like way too long a middle, like an all-rounder middle order, and they could be absolutely blown away. So it's kind of going to be, it's going to be a strange one.
Time to put it on the line. I've been saying for weeks that I'll never see Australia ever winning a test again. And you've been saying we're going to win all five. No,
well, last test, I said England win Jimmy Anderson man of the match. Jimmy Anderson looks like he's going to get dropped in Australia. So not in great
form. I'm pretty sure I said Harry Brook was man of the match.
Yeah, goodness. So I am tempted to...
Keep listening to the pod, please. We know what we're talking
I'm tempted to make the wrong prediction. But what I am going to say is I've been rattled last few days, been rattled by this whole Bairstow incident. But I actually think that as much as England are trying to get momentum out of it, I think Australia actually... But a really calm, mature squad. And I think they'll sort of come together on this. You got Kwasia in there, you know, Head's a pretty calm bloke, Carey, Cummins. So I think it'll bring them together. And I do think Australia's gonna take out this this next one. I think it's just too mixed bag for England. They're bringing players in and out. Their top order is much smaller, even if they've got a longer middle order with those changes we discussed. So I think it's gonna be Australia, and I think it's gonna be Captain Cumball, man of the match.
Nice. I rate it. It's weird, isn't it, that I actually think Australia are going to win as well.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. It feels bad. We've put it out into the universe. You know what's going to happen. Apologies, Australia. It's to your point exactly. Like the batting just feels so thin to me. So thin. And I do think they're going to play Wood because they like the extra pace, which means you're batting Moeen Ali at 7 and with Broad at 8. I just think it's going to be so thin. Harry Brook at 3. I just can't see them making enough runs to ever make it competitive for Australia. And I think Australia, to your point, you've been saying it all series, haven't got a Labuschagne innings yet, haven't got a Green innings yet, haven't really got a Big Head innings yet, even though he's made a couple of contributions, that you feel like somebody's going to make some runs. So, for me, it's Australia. And I think the man of the match is actually going to be Travis Head.
Also,
even though it's a dodgy wicket, I think there's going to be pace. The ball's going to be flying around. He's going to play one of those really dodgy streakily innings and make 130.
But yeah, Steve Smith also a good shout for man of the match. He's 100th test. Haven't touched on that, but another 100 is Becky. Yeah, just on our Australia predictions again, Taylor, I just think England had the best, quite better conditions than Australia. Threw them into bat, bowled when it was green and dark. You know, batted under the sunshine, still couldn't get a win. And in the end, Stokes made it look a lot closer than it was. So I think Australia, keep rolling that momentum.
Ben, is on Thursday night, we're going to be absolutely glued to the screens. There is going to be Ashes. Sorry if you come to this pod for anything else, for your Wimbledon update or for your Le Tour update. Vanders has got three other pods that he can direct you to. But just before we go, Thursday night could be Buddy Franklin, probably is Buddy Franklin's last game at the MCG. I don't think you're making final. Sorry, brother. As a Sydney fan, I know you've only had him for half his career. Like, what is your relationship with Buddy?
Well, I mean, he's just brilliant. I always like to compare it to a Hawthorn fan, I think, because you do respect him in a different way, because Hawthorn, you'd never seen him before. You didn't know what he could do. When he was doing some of the stuff he could do, you were just thinking to yourself, my God, what is this? This is so exciting and amazing. Then he comes to Sydney, the legend that he is, and you just, you know, he's been huge for the club as far as on-field success, but off-field success is so important for Sydney. He's just been an absolute superstar. He goes about his business quietly, likes to stay out of the limelight, and he's just an absolute legend. So I think, you know, he got booed by Collingwood fans earlier at the G, but I think the Tigers fans and the Swans fans there at the MCG for what will be his last game at the MCG, it's going to be huge. And I think Buddy will be a bit emotional, but then I hope we don't lose him from the game at all, to be honest. Hopefully.
Well, I was going to say, do you think if it is his last game at the G, you're probably not making finals. Do you think he should retire now and have a farewell tour? Do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to play every game, but as he goes around the country, just give people the chance to say goodbye.
No, I don't think that's what he'd want. I think it's obvious enough he's not playing again next year. I don't think that there needs to be sort of an out, and he'd hate it. I mean, not that I don't know him personally. I say it's like I know him. Big Bud, absolutely.
Everyone was believing you.
Bud will listen to the pod and say, no, don't do that. No, farewell to it. No, but he doesn't seem like the sort of person that would love that. And I think it's obvious enough. And he'll just enjoy going out quietly. I'm sure he'll have a beer and what's some of his greatest goals. But hopefully, you know, down the track, he does some, you know, does a little bit of coaching work with the forwards, because he's, I think, taught a young Sydney forward line a lot about their craft as well. And that's not to be underrated, just because you don't see him out there shouting, carrying on. You know, he's a big leader for the club and for the AFL too.
Well, you can tell us your favourite Buddy memory on the on the Twitter. Outside Podcast Twitter account. Oh, at OTO underscore sport pod. So please do hit us up.
What was that? Tails?
OTO underscore sport pod.
Right.
That is the Twitter handle. That is the one you've got to hit us up. Guaranteed reply. So if you're short of a few followers, you need a few likes, get your self-esteem up. We will reply to you. Trust me. But please do hit us up and tell us your favorite buddy memory. And give us your thoughts on the Ashes. You know, we've got a thriving group chat, which we might bring into the pod next week. But we do love to hear from you as well. So please do hit us up on Twitter at OTO underscore sport pod. And of course, the actual podcast itself, Spotify, Google, Apple, record players around the country. I don't even know where else it can be found, Vanders, but it can be found everywhere. Everywhere you need to find it, it can be found.
On the internet.
On the internet, yes. Anything you need can be found on the internet. On that note, Vanders, it's been lovely just getting it all off our chest.
Oh, yeah.
It's lovely talking to you.
Chat soon.